Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can.
The future of education, singularly the most important topic of our time, where it is going, how it is evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education will get to the root of this problem. And now, here is your host, Dr. James Avington Miller.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The War Report. I'm hoping that if all goes well over the next weeks, months, we'll all learn a lot about the current state of education, public education, in America and beyond. We're going to talk about a war, and I particularly use the war metaphor to get over the idea that it is actually, both literally and figuratively, a war that's being waged by corporate interests to destroy public education as we know it in order to create or erect private education for profit in most cases and to fulfill an agenda, a vision of what education should be and how we should proceed in educating the nation. That's what this show is going to be about, and what I'm going to try and do is to make as many people as I possibly can not only aware of the war, but make them critically aware of the war, and to understand, not only understand, but to critically understand the war. And then from there, hopefully, people will become motivated to do something about what is happening to public education in America and work to change what is going on and bring public education to a level of quality and equality and justice for all that we don't have now as a result of this war. Okay. War. A few weeks ago, I was a guest on a show here on BBS called Shadow Politics. The show is hosted by Senator Mike Brown from Washington, D.C., and Kathleen Gomez in Arizona. The very first question that was put to me by Senator Brown was, what is a war on public education? I didn't get a chance to really go into it in any great depth. Today I'm going to try and amplify what I mean by a war on public education. So before I begin that, I think it's important for me to tell you what today's show is all about is an introduction to what the war is about. An introduction to me, your host, and what I'm about, and laying the groundwork or the foundation for other shows that will come about that will deal specifically with various elements of the war and give us hopefully some ideas and direction for what we can do to change the course of the war, if we are so inclined. So, with that, let me just hopefully whet your appetite to say that this is a war that most people know little or nothing about. It's a war that's been raging in one form, shape, or another for decades, extending maybe as much as 10 decades. This war that whose shape and form has changed over the years, but one thing has remained constant, and that is people on both sides of the war are trying to define and control public education, implementing their vision, their mission for what public education should be. In my view, after many, many years of being involved with public education, almost from infancy to now, I've come to believe that this war is, in its current form, and particularly, is the most dangerous war on public education we've ever had. That's a mouthful. And again, I hope to lay out my argument for what I just said over the coming weeks and months. But back to the war itself, one of the things that I want to do today is to lay out the proposition that this war is a global war in nature. It's not just happening here in the United States. It's a global war that's on every continent of the world. And what I will be saying later on is that there is an agenda, a hidden agenda, that unifies every aspect of this war wherever it's being waged, be it here in the United States, Europe, Africa, Latin America, Asia. There is an objective or a major agenda that unites the various forms, strategies, tactics, action that manifests itself throughout this war. Another point that I want to get over today is that there is an agenda that drives this war. I call it the Machiavellian agenda, subtitled The Means Justify the End. I want you to remember that. The Machiavellian agenda, the means justify the end. As I mentioned just a moment ago, this war has a long history. It stretches back, as I said earlier, over decades. Previously, the war took on a different shape, form, than it does today. It was more of a shadow war. It was a war of ideology. And with both sides of the war seeking to, quote, improve education, unquote, according to their own vision of what public education should be about. In recent years, this war has moved from a shadow war to an open war, still with a hidden agenda, but open and disguised with the same purpose in mind of controlling public education. That's a mouthful. I'll go into that a little more as we go along. What I want to get over right now is that the agenda, the hidden agenda, is one that literally and figuratively has life and death potential consequences for all of humanity and the planet. Think about climate change and the war that's raging over climate change. There are those who say that if we don't correct the current course, all of humanity and the planet could go extinct. We could basically kill ourselves, destroy the planet, destroy humanity. There are those who say no, climate change is a fake, that the world and its people are not threatened by climate change, and that all is well. These same people, many of the same people, I should say the same thing about education in reverse, that public education is in crisis, and that we don't correct the crisis the correct way, then we are, and the world is at risk of self-destruction. What I want to do in this segment is to lay out what this show is all about and to suggest what the problems are and then possible solutions. Okay. One of the first things I want to do is to lay out the what, the why, the who, the where, the when, the how of the current war. And the current war is being fought by, or actually I should say waged by, on one side, by the corporate elite made up of corporations, state, federal, city, county, government officials, humanitarian, or should we say philanthropic, nonprofit organizations, financial elite. They all come together and prosecute this war for their own ends. And I want to identify all of the above, who these people are, why they're doing what they're doing, what they're doing and why they're doing what they're doing, what their goals are, their strategies, their tactics, everything. Name, names, places, time, date. On the other side of the war is the resistance. I want to do the same thing in terms of identifying who, what, why, where, when, how the resistance is rising and what the goals and objectives of the resistance movement is. And I want to make as many people as I possibly can critically aware and to critically understand this war. Because if not, then there won't be a resistance. There won't be organized effort to do something to stop this war and to defeat the war and its agenda. That's my mission with this show, is to make as many people critically aware, understand, and then take critical, positive action to do just that. So, during the course of this show, I will lay out what I call the critical path, both the critical path to the war, the critical path to the rise of resistance to it, and a critical path to how we may, and I say we because I include myself in this war, we may defeat the agenda, the Machiavellian agenda of the so-called corporate reformers. That too is a lot. But what I want to do is to today just speak in general overview terms of how this show is going to proceed, how I'm going to seek to accomplish the mission, my main mission here, in terms of defeating the corporate reformers and their war to privatize everyone and everything on the planet. Now, that's something I just added for you because that's what I was saving for the end. I view this war, and now many other people are viewing this war, as a war to basically privatize everyone and everything on the planet. Me, you, and everything that we do, would be turned into profit for others. And in order to do this, one of the first things that the privatizers have to do is to destroy as many, if not all, of public good social institutions. Education in our country is education, going after Medicare, seeking to privatize Medicare, going after pensions, seeking to privatize pension, going after Social Security, seeking to privatize Social Security, taking it out of the public arena and putting it in the hands of corporations to manage or to control. And the list goes on and on in terms of the bottom line of all of this is to privatize everyone. So we all become commodities. We all have a market value. Everything that we do has a market value, and everything is studied, manipulated, and redirected to make profit from everyone, everything, including the planet itself. That is part and parcel of what I'm calling the Machiavellian agenda. In my view, the consequences of not recognizing this agenda, not understanding it, and not taking critical action will result in a world that I don't think most of us, and when I say most of us, I'm now speaking about the 99% that became so famous during the Occupy movement of a couple years ago. The 1% that controls everything in the world versus the 99% who is struggling to under the control of the 1%. I think the consequences for us will be devastating. And I will direct you to, and I'm laughing over here to myself, to a movie and a book called 1984. Hopefully many of you will know the book or the movie, George Orwell's book, that laid out what a future Western civilization would look like 35 years from the time in which he wrote his book. And if you know the movie, know the book, he spoke of a totalitarian world with Big Brother watching everything, listening to everything we do, to life being regimented and controlled, manipulated by this unseen Big Brother. I draw on Orwell because when I saw the movie as a young man, it scared the hell out of me. It really did. I have never forgotten it. In fact, when I started my teaching career at the university level, in my intro class, my sociology, intro sociology class, my intro to social psychology, I used George Orwell's 1984 as one of the supplemental texts for my course because I wanted the students to see what it was to understand human behavior at its worst so that they would go away with some idea of the importance of being aware and understanding the world in which we live in now and how it has been in the past and how it could be in the future. So, in one sense, I'm sort of like parroting 1984. There are a couple other books or movies that I will probably refer, not probably, I definitely will refer to occasionally, one being The Matrix. living in an artificial world and not realizing that the world that you live in is not a real world as is, that it is a fabricated world, I will be drawing on The Matrix. I'll even draw on more current movies like Harry Potter series, the current hit that's out there, The Hunger Games, and, oh, it's one of my new favorites, The House of Cards, and The Game of Thrones. I think all of these movies depict themes of where we are, where we could possibly be headed, where we come from in terms of path, and it may do, I think, a great deal of work trying to make people aware and understand the same thing that I'm doing. And one other thing, and I also laugh when I think about this, public schools, teachers, and schools have been criticized for not training students to be critical thinkers, to understand things at a deeper level, and to be able to critically think their way through problems, problem solving. Well, I've used the word critical I don't know how many times so far in this conversation. In essence, I'm taking their criticism and leveling it back directly at them, because I want the same thing, and I've always wanted as a teacher to have my students become critically aware, develop critical understanding, and be able to make and take critical action as it related to themselves and the world in which they live in. So, again, this is one of the main premises of this show, is to bring people who may not be aware of this war, or maybe ill-informed about the war, to bring them to a critical understanding, awareness first, and understanding of the war and the agenda driving the war. Once again, we'll take a short break so that you can hopefully digest what I just said, and we'll be back in a few seconds. Okay, we are back. For the rest of this show, I'm going to sort of like lay out a preview of upcoming shows. I'm going to start with the next show offering a sort of a brief history of this, what I'm calling the central conflict that underlies the entire history of this war. And then I'm going to move into various periods of time that the war raised its head, and when I hesitate there only because then in the past it was not called a war, it was not perceived as a war per se, it was a conflict or a struggle of visions. I'm going to go from there to where we are now into what I'm calling a war. After that show, well, maybe during that show, we're going to get into the process of beginning to further define the war. And I'm going to start naming names, purpose, and et cetera, of who's behind this war. And then I'm going to, following weeks, I'll get into the strategies, the tactics of this war. Some of you will not have a clue as to what I'll be talking about at the very beginning. For example, I'll talk about something called the Common Core. I'm going to wager right now that most of you have no idea about what I mean when I say Common Core. Parents, students, teachers who are currently involved with public education, they have some knowledge and awareness, but I don't think they have the depth of understanding about this thing that's called the Common Core, and its strategic, I mean super strategic role in this war and its outcome. I'll talk about what many people already know about, what is now called high-stakes standard testing. I think there isn't a student out there who doesn't know what I'm talking about because they are living through it now, and many have lived through it in the past. But we'll go into that, and we'll go into why it came about, this emphasis on testing, and what its real purpose is in terms of the outcome of this war. We'll go into the war that's being waged against teachers, unions, why, how, and again, the strategic role that such an attack on teachers and public school teachers and public schools, from individual schools all the way up to districts, is really, really about. That's just one of the many things. We'll talk about the role of propaganda. Many people who know something about, quote, the current state of education, that it's bad, it's terrible, and how it got there, and why it should be dismantled and reconfigurated, are speaking from what has been a 30-year shadow war of propaganda to get people to perceive public education as being in a crisis that threatens the national security of this country, a crisis that has global implications, that we are behind other Western nations in terms of our education program and the quality of our education, and what we must do to close that gap between us and other nations. And you will learn that it's all a lie, that the crisis is not the crisis which they have led us to believe. But there is a real crisis, and the crisis comes from the control, manipulation, the creative plan to destroy public education and turn it into privatized education. We will get into many other things, and particularly what I think you'll find hopefully really informative will be when we start talking about the players and the playlist. And I'm going to say this now, hopefully to whet your appetite. The playlist runs from the office of the president, be it a Republican or Democrat, through the Department of Education, down through the governors, state legislatures. Oh, I missed someone. Our U.S. representatives, senators, down to governors, both Democrats and Republicans, down to state houses of legislature. I think I just butchered that. Down to superintendents of education at the state level, down to districts, down to individual schools. You'll learn, if you stay with us, you'll learn a lot more than you have any idea that you will learn about and probably even want to know about in terms of what is going on. You'll learn that the main reason given for the attack on public education is that there's an achievement gap between poor, usually racial minorities, and middle class, upper class, white, suburban America. And that what is going on from the corporate reform side is aimed at eliminating this achievement gap. Well, folks, the achievement gap as it relates to domestically and internationally. You'll learn something about that that hopefully will change your mind if you believe what you've been told so far. We'll talk about this whole testing thing, and we'll talk about the concern about high school graduation. These are all points that the reformers point to when they're talking about why it's necessary to reform public education. I almost choke when I use the word reform, because reform in the past has always meant, regardless of what side of the reform issue you were on, meant improving public education. The people who use the term reform today, they're not interested in reforming or improving public education. They're interested in destroying public education. And as I continue to say, and erect in its place a privatized education system. And you'll learn a lot about what's happening from pre-K all the way up to PhD. Many people are not aware of how the war is being waged on higher education. It is. And it's potentially devastating. I personally I can't wait to get to that show, because I spent most of my teaching career at the university level. And I'm going to tell you something. As I had mentioned earlier, this war started a long time ago, even when I was teaching, and I did not see it then. And I certainly didn't see how it was going to manifest itself out in the future from the time that I was in school. What I've learned now is really a wake-up call for me. And it's also part of the reason why I'm doing this show, is that many of us in education, especially during the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the beginning of the 2000s, we're not aware of what was happening. Very subtle, but very deliberate. Things were being done. Things were being implemented that we didn't recognize until it was too late. And that's one of my real strong motivation for wanting to do this show, that if it could happen to me, and my colleagues and teachers all over the country, the world, we weren't aware, we didn't understand. It's very, very now understandable why the public didn't see it coming and don't understand today that it's a war and what the war is all about. So we'll cover a lot of issues here. I think one of the things that I really want to get over the course of our time is, even though we're talking about public education, what I will be talking about extends well beyond just public education. It extends to almost every aspect of our lives. Let me give you a few examples. Hopefully some of you will remember during George Bush the second administration, he made a concerted effort to privatize both Medicare and Social Security. Clinton promised and was elected on his promise of changing the welfare system as we know it. And he did. George Bush II, in addition to going after Medicare and Social Security, he introduced us to something called No Child Left Behind. Misnomer. And we'll go into that. Obama has promised hope, the audacity of hope, that things will be changed and things will be better. Instead, what he has done, he introduced us to Race to the Top, which is George Bush, No Child Left Behind, on steroids. And we'll talk about these things. And one of the many things we'll talk about will be charter schools. I'm betting that many people will have a lot to say when we get to the issue of charter schools. This whole notion of using government money, taxpayers' money, to fund private education in the form of charter schools, vouchers, now online schooling, homeschooling. I don't know how much people really know about these programs and how they fit into this war strategy, but you will learn. And when I say I'm really referring to future shows, hopefully we'll have guests, maybe more than one guest on a show, who are experts in the area or the topic we're discussing, both from being academics, scholars, to practitioners, to members of the general public. I plan to talk to or have people who talk to us about what's going on, representing students, high school, college, parents, community people, all the way up to union representatives, retired teachers, anyone and everyone who has had a history with public education in the past, I'm sure will have something to say about what's going on today. Which brings me to another point. There is a major war being waged against pensions, retirement plans. There are people at all levels of government who want to go in, change the terms of current pension programs to a level of detriment that was not part of the bargain when these pension plans were agreed to and when people spent their lives contributing to this plan. There are organizations that I'll talk about. One is called, nicknamed ALEX, American Legislative Exchange Council, that is a driving force behind the privatization of public education and everything else. You probably never heard of ALEX, but you will, because it is one of the most important entities on the corporate reform side that's going on right now. Again, I've talked quite a bit. We have a few minutes left. We're going to take another short break and then come back and close out. Hang in there.
No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen.
Okay, we're back. As I look at the clock, I think we have about 5 to 7 minutes left in this show. And I'm going to sort of like tell you a little bit about myself and how I got to this show. I have spent my entire life in and around doing education. I'm going to have a show that's going to deal with parents, the role of parents in educating their children. And the show will be Parents Matter. And there will be several shows under the Matter banner. But anyway, for me, my parents got married very young. My mother was 17, and I think my father was 21. And they're both from the most rural part of southern Illinois. And my father was a person who couldn't read or write, because he never went to school a day in his life. From age 5 or so, his mother had him out in the fields working, carrying water, whatever he could do to earn some money to help take care of the family. My mother, on the other hand, was a lot better off in that her parents were people who owned a nice parcel of land. I think it was about 60 acres in our family. All of her brothers and sisters, she was the last of 12 children, 8 of whom survived, had some form of education. And her mother, my grandmother, had some form of education. So education was on one side of my family, and it wasn't on the other. When my mother and father married, they moved up to Detroit during World War II because my father got a call from his sister saying, get to Detroit. There were jobs available. There were not enough men to fill those jobs. So they packed up and they moved to Detroit. Once my mother got to Detroit, she went to see, quote, and I laugh about this too, her first city doctor. And when she visited this doctor over a couple visits, she was told that the chances of her being able to deliver a live, well child were virtually slim and none. And not only that, but her own life was at stake. It was in jeopardy. With that news, she comes home, tells my father. They get on the phone. They call my mother's mother. Within a few days, she arrives in Detroit to start taking care of us. Oh, one of the things that the doctor told her was that if she would go home, go straight to bed, and not get up for the duration of the pregnancy, what was left of the pregnancy, and to start smoking cigarettes, she might have a chance of one or both of us surviving the pregnancy. During this time, after she got home, went to bed, my grandmother arrived, and et cetera, my mother told me the story of how she would pray every night that her God would at least save one of us, and she wanted it to be me. But if he saw fit to save both of us, she made what I now call a grand bargain. And that bargain was that her child born healthy, he survived the pregnancy, hopefully would survive the world in which he was born into, grow up, go to this university that she just learned about called Wayne State University there in Detroit, which was our flagship university, would become a doctor, and would go out and help people. That was her dream, and that was her bargain. Folks, I survive, obviously. I think I was 9.5 pounds when I was born, and I was healthy. I had all my fingers and toes and et cetera. I did survive. I went to Wayne State University. I earned my doctorate there, and I have gone forth and tried my very best to help people. That was her dream that became my destiny. And my father's dream also. His dream was a little bit more practical. I call those two dreams that they had a tale of two dreams. For my father, he just wanted me to get an education and be able to have a better life than what he had. And that he believed education was the key. He used to tell me time and time again that he wanted me to grow up, have a job that I would go to wearing a white shirt, come home at the end of the day, and that white shirt would still be clean. Something totally opposite of his life. He would go to work, come back, grit, grime, dust, dirt, all over him. The only thing that you could see that wasn't dirt-filled was his eyes. So I have spent my life trying to make their dreams my destiny, and I got to this show via having spent most of my adult life as an educator. And when I look back over from the time I started public school until the time that I stopped teaching, I've done that. I've worked hard at trying to promote education, especially to minorities, the importance of it. So I am one of the most passionate, staunch public supporter of education that you can find. A few years ago, when I became aware of this war and its aims, I was outraged. I was furious, and I'm being politically correct because we're on the air. I use some expletives, a lot of them. And I decided that perhaps my destiny was beyond just trying to help people, individuals, small groups, and et cetera, but my destiny was to join this war to try and make as many people, and I say when I say many, I'm talking thousands, millions, because this show is a global show with the potential of a global audience, every broadcast, aware of this war, or what I want you to remember, I'm calling it the Machiavellian agenda, as I possibly can, and to equip us with knowledge and tools to wage a resistance that will lead to defeat of this corporate war. That's my mission. I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to do it. And in the course of this show, I will lay out what I think is a feasible path that we can follow. It's not anything new, because many of the things that I'll talk about are already being done by very courageous people, teachers, parents, concerned citizens, students, already amplify what is already taking place, give it some context, and hopefully motivate and inspire mass involvement in defeating the corporate takeover of my beloved public education. Now, time is out. In fact, I've gone over time. So, see you in, well, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Enjoy, and hope to have you back, ready to really roll up your sleeves and get an understanding and hopefully involved.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.
I said war! Good God, y'all!
What is it good for?
Absolutely!
Let's get
said again!
War!
Lord, Lord, Lord!
What is it good for?
Absolutely!
Nothing!
Listen to me!